Member Week is here at Lowe's. That means it's time for My Lowe's Rewards members to save big with up to 40% off hundreds of items like appliances, tools, home essentials, and more. Plus, get free standard shipping. Shop these exclusive member-only savings now through October 15th. Not a rewards member? Join for free today. Free standard shipping not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Welcome back, everyone, to the channel. Tonight's terrifying video is about this ex-park ranger, now getting a security job over at this windmill location. And for our second story, I have my good buddy Entropic Society joining us around the campfire. Now let's get spooky. If you're new to the channel, subscribe, click on that bell, and smash that thumbs up and tell a friend. I used to work as a park ranger in a fire tower. After that went horribly bad, I got a job working in a warehouse. That also was a disaster. I just wish I would stop finding jobs that have strange rules. I don't go looking for terrifying supernatural happenings. They just kind of seem to find me. The bad part is, I need a job if I want to keep living in my opulent non-alley dweller begging for food lifestyle. I was looking through the job pages for anything. I was about to apply to a fast food restaurant when my eyes fell on an ad for a night watchman. I was about to pass it up, thinking about the injuries that were still healing after my last night watchman job when I noticed it was a wind farm. I had to look up exactly what a wind farm was, and found out it was where they had wind turbines that generated electricity. I saw there was a lot of controversy over environmentalists claiming that wind turbines were the worst thing to ever happen to wildlife. I always thought that wind turbines were designed to replace dangerous nuclear power plants and polluting coal and oil ones. I guess you can't please some people. I called the number and was surprised to receive an answer from an actual person rather than an answering machine. The man asked if I could start Monday. Not could I interview or fill out a bunch of paperwork if I could start. He didn't even know me. My spidey sense was telling me to beware. He told me the hourly wage, and there was an immediate $500 signing bonus. Greed and need pushed their way to the front of my thoughts, and I agreed to come to the job site. I told him I had some questions. He hesitated but agreed. 25 minutes later, I turned down a gravel road past an open gate with a sign beside it that read, Larson Energy Limited. I pulled up next to a building that reminded me of the warehouse where I had worked for one day and was nearly killed. I shivered at the thought and hoped this job would turn out much better. I walked up the door and was nearly run over by a short, round, balding man who appeared to be in his late 40s. His hand was outstretched and shaking mine before the door was completely open. "Are you the one I talked to on the phone?" he said, smiling. "I believe so." "Good," he said. "Come with me, I'll show you around." I followed him to a pickup truck and got in the passenger side. He started it up and headed down a dirt road that was surrounded by trees that were in the general direction of the wind turbines. I stared at them in awe, having never been closer to one than a few miles away. "Impressive, aren't they?" he said, following my gaze. "Very. Just wait until you get beside one." He drove slowly, not going over 20 miles per hour, but the road dictated the speed in general. It had some potholes that were large. I could imagine there would be many lakes during a heavy rainstorm. "I'm not sure my car would make it through this during bad weather," I said. "Not to worry," he said. "This is a company truck. This is what you'll be driving." And what exactly would my duties be? Exactly what we're doing now, he said, sweeping his arms towards the windshield. Doing rounds, making sure no one is messing with the turbines. I waited for the rest, for the strange rules, for the catch. That's it? That's it, he said. You'll do 4 rounds a night. You make sure no one is stealing anything or messing around with the turbines. Other than that, you'll just chase off trespassers. Do you have a lot of trespassers? He seemed to hesitate for a moment. Once in a while, some environmentalists will lurk around trying to take pictures of birds but being hurt by the turbines. They even like to dress up as woodland creatures to scare people. What do I do if I catch one? Take their picture and forward it to the police. That's it? You won't be carrying a gun or anything if that's what you're asking. No, I meant, shouldn't I inform you or security? You are security. I stopped and thought about it for a moment. Don't worry, he said. It doesn't happen often. Is there anything that does happen often? What do you mean? Are there any strange rules or anything weird that happens that I should know about? His eyes grew wider, but he tried to answer calmly. No, he said with a nervous chuckle. Of course not. My eyes bored into his, searching for any lies. He looked away, pretending to pay attention to the road. It's very simple, he said. Do your rounds, make sure no one trespasses, and you'll be fine. You could even bring a portable DVD player if you want or a book to read. Even use the company Wi-Fi to watch movies on your phone, as long as you do your rounds. No catch? No catch. We had just arrived back at the main building. He parked in front and led me inside to do paperwork and gave me a check for the $500 bonus. Awesome, I said. When do I start? He looked at his watch. Right now. Really? He handed me the keys to the truck. Go get whatever you need out of your car and you could start your first round. I looked at my watch as I walked out the door. It was 5 till 7 in the evening. I got my water bottle and lunchbox from my car, then headed towards the truck. Another similar pickup pulled into the spot beside me and a man got out. He was older than me, tall and thin, probably in his 50s.
Are you the new guy?
He said, walking over to me. I guess so, I said, shaking his hand.
I do the daylight shift, he said. So did he tell you everything?
I think so, I said as the manager came flying out through the doors.
No time for chit-chat, he said, chuckling nervously. Time to make that first round.
I looked from him to the other guard. I could tell there was concern on both of their faces, but they seemed to be different. The guard turned back towards his truck.
Nice to meet ya,
he said, getting into his truck and busying himself with something. The manager breathed a sigh of relief and turned away.
Oh, and one last thing, he said.
The office is locked after hours, so if you need any facilities... He turned and pointed to a porter potty sitting near the edge of the parking lot.
Understood, I said.
Who do I contact in case of an emergency? He reached into his pocket and pulled out a business card, then handed it to me.
Emergencies only, he said.
Then he smiled and walked to his car, started it, and drove away. I got into the truck and started it up, nearly having a heart attack when the other guard knocked on the window.
Here, he said, handing me a piece of paper. You could call or text if you have any trouble.
Thanks, I said, taking the paper. He opened his mouth as if he wanted to say something, then closed it and walked away. I watched as he drove to the gate, got out of his car, closed and locked it. It didn't have the same feeling of finality as when I was locked in that horrible warehouse, but it was close. Nothing to be afraid of, I told myself. Just security measures. I kept telling myself that as I started down the dirt road towards the wind turbines. I drove slowly, wanting to make sure I kept my eye out for anyone. Even though the sun hadn't set yet, it was darker on the road as the tree.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Trees blocked the sunlight. The road was barely a two-lane, but I don't think I'll have to worry about any traffic jams out here. I rolled my window down, and the scent of pine filled the truck. I leaned my arm out the window and took a deep breath. The last time I was in a forest like this was in the warehouse job, but I didn't get to enjoy the trees. This was like gliding down a river that cut through the middle of the forest. I felt very relaxed. Too relaxed. I had to make sure I stayed awake and didn't drive into a ditch. The birds singing in the trees made me smile. This job turned out to be exactly what I needed. My shoulder tinged, reminding me of my injury, and I brought it back to my side. As I drove, the first turbine loomed ahead of me. It was massive. I leaned my head out the window and craned my neck to see the top. The blades weren't moving for some reason. I would have to look that up on my phone when I get back to the parking lot. I stopped to avoid a deer that had wandered out in front of me. It looked at me as though I was intruding on its evening routine. "I'm sorry, Your Majesty," I said to it, "but if you would kindly move, I'll be on my way." It looked at me as if considering my proposition, and then flicked its tail and trotted off into the woods. I smiled and continued on down the road. The second turbine came up quickly. It lost a little of its amazement of the first, but it was still an awesome sight. By the time I passed the third and fourth, I didn't even look up. I just glanced over at the door at the base of the tower to see if anyone was messing with it. The next turbine was missing. I saw a clearing just like all the others, but there was no tower and no turbine. I decided to take a closer look. I put the truck in park and shut it off. Out of habit, I took the keys with me. There was still enough daylight to see without a flashlight, but just barely. I walked up to where the tower should have been, but all that was there was the base. It was black and there was debris around it. It was clear that much more debris had been taken away. I didn't see the amount of wreckage I would have expected for a 400-foot tower with a wind turbine on top coming crashing down. As I examined it closer, it seemed like there were a lot of burn marks and melting. I looked around the general area and there were signs of scorching in the trees and along the ground. I wondered why the boss hadn't mentioned this. I never heard of a wind turbine burning up before. I would have thought that this would be something worth mentioning to the new security guard. As I looked around, I heard something move in the trees. It startled me because it would have had to be loud for me to hear it over the normal noises of the forest. but then I noticed the normal sounds of the forest were gone. It was eerily quiet. No birds, squirrels, or even insect sounds were audible. I was standing alone in the near dark, surrounded by trees and animals that weren't making any sounds. It was like the forest was holding its breath to see what would happen next. My mind was a flurry of thoughts. Are the animals afraid of me? Is this one of those crazy environmentalists? Should I really be standing here exposed, waiting for something to happen? My legs got the message, and I hightailed it back to the truck as quickly as I could. I rolled up the windows, locked the doors, and made a dust cloud from my tires as I left the area a little too quickly. When I got to the next turbine, my adrenaline had bled off, and I was feeling silly for letting myself get scared like that. I slowed to a normal speed and finished my round. The parking lot was empty, so I had my pick of spots. I decided to park close to the porta potty, just in case. I settled in and pulled out my phone. Normally I'd go to YouTube and watch some creepypastas, but darkness had finally set in for the night, and I didn't feel like scaring myself any more than I already did. There were a few security lights in the parking lot, near the building and at the far corners. But once I started around, the only light I had was what I took with me. Maybe I could convince the boss to mount one of those strips of LED lights on the front of the truck. This would be one of those few legit reasons to have those. Every time I passed a car or truck on the highway with those lights blinding me, I have a strong urge to get a million candle power spotlight and shine it in their eyes. At least, that's what it feels like they're doing to me. I scrolled through Netflix, looking for a show to watch. Creatures in the Dark? Nope. Places You Thought Were Safe? Nope. Cryptids of Appalachia? Not even. What is Netflix trying to do to me? If I watch Black Mirror, will it go straight to an episode where a security guard gets horribly mangled in the forest? Comedies. I'll watch The Office. It's not on Netflix, of course. As soon as I want to watch something, it's gone. Sometimes I wish Blockbuster would have bought Netflix when they had the chance. I'll open up my Kindle and read a book. This one looks good. One on One by Michael Kelso. A crime fiction set in prison. An hour into the book, the alarm on my phone goes off. Time for another round. Wow, that went fast. I set the phone aside and checked the glove compartment for a flashlight. Fortunately, there was one. It was one of those fancy ones that was very bright and had a strobe flash mode on it. I wondered if I could borrow it to show some of those idiots with the bright LED lights mounted on the front of their trucks. I found myself more on guard this round. The noises of the forest had returned, thankfully. I opened my window a few inches, just enough to let some fresh air and the nightly noises in. The darkness seemed oppressive. After the first round being nearly daylight, this time the world was confined in the two beams of light fighting the overwhelming shadows of the menacing forest. I found myself going a little faster than last time. It wasn't really a conscious choice, just my subconscious asserting itself. Once again, when I got to the burnout ruins of the wind turbine, the noises ceased. I went a little faster through that area. I thought I saw movement in the tree line heading towards me, but I refused to stop. I justified it by telling myself there was no working turbine there to vandalize. A little rattled, I finished my round quickly, nearly bumping my head on the ceiling of the truck a couple of times from bouncing down the dirt road much faster than I should have. When I came out of the forest, I welcomed the bright light and relative safety of the parking lot. This time, I parked at the end farthest away from the trees, under a security light, just for good measure. As I read my book, my eyes kept darting towards the trees as if I expected something to jump out at me. I continued to tell myself I was being foolish, but I also kept shooting glances at the trees. When my alarm went off for the next round, it took extra effort to make myself start the truck and aim for the headlights towards the trees. The forest had gotten darker and more oppressive. It had also gotten quieter. There were still a few creatures making sounds, but not as many. I told myself that most of them had gone to sleep. I only wished I had believed it. Even the scent of pine had diminished. It had another scent to it now, the ting of fear. My eyes darted from one side of the road to the other, taking in as much of my surroundings as possible. Which wasn't much, with the headlights barely able to cut a path through the suffocating darkness. I nearly jumped out of my skin when a deer walked in front of the truck. I slammed on the brakes, making a dust cloud hover in front of me. The deer glanced at me, then got spooked and ran off. I chuckled to myself at that little bit of revenge of the deer being scared of me. But my chuckle soon turned to chills. As the dust cleared, I saw something coming out of the trees. It was big, dark.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Dark and covered with fur. Sweat formed on my brow as my mind kicked into gear and my foot smashed on the gas pedal. A cloud of dust flew from my rear tires as the truck galloped away. I glanced in my rearview mirror and to my horror, the creature was running behind me. Even worse, it was gaining. I stepped on the gas, making my speedometer jump and making me ride the seat like a bucking bronco. Thankfully, I had my seatbelt on, or I would have been knocked unconscious by the bigger bumps and ruts sending my head towards the ceiling. I refused to look back for a long time. When I did, the creature was gone. I breathed a sigh of relief and slowed a little. I was never so happy to see the parking lot. I parked in the same spot at the far end, under a light, and thought back to my encounter, trying to make sense of it. The creature was huge. It was easily over 7 feet tall and walked on 2 legs. No, it ran on 2 legs. It was going nearly 35 miles an hour chasing me. That was the other thing. Why was it chasing me? What did I do to annoy it? Or was it just looking for a midnight snack? Time to get some answers. I got the piece of paper the other guard had given me and typed in the number. Then I sent him a text. I checked my watch and it was 2:30 in the morning. I didn't really expect an answer, but to my surprise, my phone dinged. I was expecting a message sooner, it said. Why? Let's just say I don't think the boss told you everything. Such as? You tell me why you messaged me first. Okay, have you ever been chased by anything during a round? Define anything. Oh, I don't know. Like a deer, a bear, a big hairy creature over 7 feet tall walking on its hind legs? Are you going to quit if I tell you the truth?
That depends on what the truth is. Nope. You have to promise not to quit before I tell you. Why? Because if you quit, I have to go back on night shift. And that's a bad thing? Promise you won't quit. I was having flashbacks to my last two jobs. Being tricked into a horrible situation, and then being told what was really going on. I can't promise. I've been burned in my last two jobs by strange rules. Strange rules? You don't want to know. Sounds like I do. Then you tell me what's going on here, and I'll tell you what happened in my last two jobs. If you promise you won't quit, I'll make you a deal. I'll tell you about my last two jobs, and then after that, you tell me if that happens here or worse. All right. I told him about my jobs as a park ranger in a fire tower and the warehouse guard. About the strange and supernatural things that happened, and how they damaged me mentally and physically. When I was done, he didn't answer right away. That was some story, is it true? Those things happened to me. Wow, okay. What's happening here is you're being chased by Bigfoot. Alright, if you didn't want to tell me, you don't have to lie. I'm not lying. Just think about the way you described the creature to me. 7 feet tall, covered in hair, walking on hind legs. I thought about it for a long moment. Then why is he after me? He's not actually. He's after whoever patrols the roads. But why? Go to a site called Reddit and read the story called "I used to be a night watchman at a wind farm. What I saw there still haunts me." After you've read that, if you have more questions, text me. Okay. I went to the site and read the story. When I was done, I slowly lowered my phone, eyes wide. I text. I had read stories on Reddit before. I'd always thought they were made up. That's what I thought too. But if this thing burned up, how is it chasing me? It's not. I'm confused. I helped bury the thing. It's dead. What's chasing you is its mate, brother, cousin, who knows. But some creature with ties to that one, and it's not happy. And let me guess, it only comes out at night. Yep. I quit. You SOB, you promised. So you'd rather have me die than quit? You won't die if you stay in the truck. How do you know? Because I've been the one doing night shift. I thought about it for a long time. Okay, I've got one round left to go. If I make it without dying, we'll talk about my continued employment. And whatever we agree on, you'll have to back me up with the boss. Deal. I started towards the forest. No time like the present if I'm going to die, right? As I pulled into the trees, it felt like I was passing through the gates at Jurassic Park. I hoped I would fare better than they did. The darkness was complete. Only the truck's headlights fought a losing battle, enabling me to see it all. When I came near a turbine, I used the flashlight to illuminate the base of the tower and see if anyone was there. Once I got past the turbine, I quickly shut off the light. I had no desire to see anything. I just rolled the window down just enough to hear the nightly noises. When I got to the second turbine, they went silent. I clutched the wheel with white knuckles, waiting to see what would happen. I was so busy looking around for something in the woods, I almost ran into a huge boulder sitting in the middle of the road. That wasn't here before, was my first thought, followed quickly by, it's barricading the road so I can't speed away. The second thought jarred me into action. I turned the wheel hard and swerved around the rock. Fortunately, it hadn't rained in a few days, so there wasn't any soft ground along the side of the road. I stepped on the gas as I rounded the boulder just in time to see another boulder heading straight towards me. I swerved and floored it, feeling the impact of the rock as it hit the ground beside the truck, missing me by a mere foot. I fishtailed spewing dirt at the tires, fought to gain traction. Once I straightened out, I got as much speed as I could, bumping around so much I worried about the suspension on the tires. Anything that stopped this truck would be the death of me. I felt pretty good about outrunning the creature when I saw something terrible in front of me. I slammed on the brakes and slid to a stop right in front of two more boulders sitting in the middle of the road. They were spaced far enough apart that I couldn't just swerve around. I had to pick a side with more room and go slowly around, nearly scraping the trees as I did. I had just made it around when something crashed into the back of the truck, sending it flying forward. I looked back and the taillight was crumpled. There was a boulder lying on the ground beside the other two that hadn't been there a minute ago. I jumped on the gas pedal as a boulder landed right in front of me. I wrenched the wheel to the right, feeling the metal scraping against the side of the truck, but I refused to take my foot off the gas. The scraping got louder. I knew this was it. He would catch up with me, and I would die a horrible death. And then the scraping stopped, and the truck lurched forward. I was free. I built up a little speed and then started swerving back and forth in the road in case he tried to throw another boulder. I counted the 20 before letting off the gas. Sweat dripped from my forehead. I wiped my sweaty hands on my pants. My hands were stiff from holding the wheel so tightly. I kept my speed up, not wanting to give him a chance to catch up with me as I bounced down the road. I turned a corner and slammed on the brakes. It was impossible. He was standing in the middle of the road right in front of me. How could he have gotten here first? He stared at me and bared his teeth. For an instant, I thought about turning around, but I was almost to the end of my road.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playmcd.com for full details and amoe.playmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus plans November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.
Round and going back meant guiding my truck back through a deadly obstacle course. With no other option, I floored it and drove straight at him. If I was going to die, I was going to do my best to take him with me. He stood motionless as I gained speed. Just before I got there, he jumped. I watched as he landed behind the truck and he turned on a dime to follow behind. I was gaining speed, but it wasn't enough. He grabbed my taillight and pulled against. For a moment I felt the truck slow, but then the tailgate broke free and left him holding a figurative bag. He ran behind, throwing the tailgate at me. I ducked just in time, as it smashed through the rear window and kept going through the front windshield. I peeked back only to see him chasing again. I tried to gain more speed. It was more difficult covered in glass, each bounce in the road now making pieces of glass cut into me. It was also difficult seeing with no windshield to protect my eyes, and pieces of glass flying towards me from the remains of the windshield. I held up my hand to try to shield my eyes. As I did, I noticed I was slowing down. I pressed the gas pedal harder, but seemed to slow even more.
I turned to find the creature holding the bed of the truck and digging its feet into the road to slow me down. I got my phone and recorded him holding the truck back for a few moments. At least whoever found the destroyed truck would know what happened to me. I resigned myself to my fate. I let off the gas and allowed the truck to stop. He released the back and started climbing into the bed. I was moments from death. I looked down at my phone and pressed record, then grabbed the flashlight, switched it to strobe, and shone it at his face. He put his arms up to shield his eyes. I slammed the truck in drive and jumped on the gas. The creature rolled head over heels out of the bed as I sped away. I hit the parking lot doing 45 and nearly crashed into the boss as he drove up to the building. I skipped to a stop and threw the truck in park. Right behind the boss, there was the other guard. "What the hell do you think you're doing?" the boss said, glaring at me. "Surviving," I said as I turned the engine off and tossed him the keys through the missing windshield. For the first time, he noticed the condition of the ruined truck. "What happened to my truck?" he said. "I don't know," I said sarcastically. "Maybe it was a giant creature chasing me that you neglected to mention." His eyes went wide and his jaw dropped open. "I have no idea what you're talking about," he said, regaining his composure. "I figured you wouldn't," I said as the other guard had walked up to us. "Take a look at this." I opened my phone and played the video of the creature pulling the truck to a stop. They both watched in shock until the video ended. I put my phone in my pocket and looked at each of them. "Both of you want me to keep working here, correct?" I said. They nodded. "Here's my terms. A double in pay, taser, pepper spray, heavy firearms, upgraded trucks." "Is that it?" the boss said sarcastically. "No. I want you to hire a cryptid hunter to come in today and capture or kill that thing." "I have no idea how to get a hold of," the boss said. "Those are my terms." "Give it to him, or I'll quit too," the other guard said. The boss looked back and forth between us like he was watching a tennis match. "Fine, I'll get what you want," he said, throwing his hands in the air. I smiled and shook his hand, then walked to my car. "Oh, one more thing," I said. "You might want to have a bulldozer clear the road." The boss looked towards the trees as I drove by. I prayed he would do as I asked. I couldn't go back there knowing that thing was waiting for me.
The Wasatch Wendigo, written and narrated by Entropic Society. Dreams are such a peculiar concept, being able to have such vivid and detailed events unfold before us, derived from logic, yet we accept the current reality to be normal. We don't ever question anything since we don't know better. But what if our dreams had a purpose? What if the universe, or some higher power, is revealing unto us something of importance? In the mountains of Wasatch County, Utah, a group of young men who were off deployment from the Marines gathered together as a celebration of their first deployment in Iraq. The five young men and their girlfriends all agreed to stay in a remote cabin in the summer season. One of the Marines in the group grew up in Utah and had always heard about Wasatch County. The county was one of the places in the state to be considered a paranormal hotspot. This was somewhat a running joke since the county was simply small and had very little going on. Crowning the county as a paranormal haven for horror junkies was thought as a marketing strategy to garnish attention throughout the state, and even the United States to promote tourism and the small county. The area nestled up against the mountains and was beautiful, but was considered remote compared to the rest of the state. However, the county contained several lakes and reservoirs that made it a boater's dream come true. None of the Marines nor their girlfriends owned an actual boat, but the owners of the Airbnb that they reserved offered a boating option for an additional $1,000, which they all agreed to pay. But like most events with young Marines with too much money, no event or gathering would be complete without copious amounts of alcohol and guns. The Airbnb was located up a decent ways away from civilization, which made reception on anyone's cell phone nearly impossible. But that was somewhat the point for the outing. The group arrived midday at the remote mountain home with vehicles full of young adults. The cars were divided up, guys in one car and the girlfriends in another. The thick trees that surrounded the mountain home were in full bloom. Their limbs carried full leaves, making the home seem to have a natural shading which gave it a dark, natural aura amidst the beautiful backdrop that surrounded it. The group of guys exited their vehicle, some already indulging in liquid courage as they entered the home. The girl's vehicle arrived a few minutes later. The guys were still unloading their vehicle and gave a warm but teasing arrival as they pulled into the gravel driveway. The Marines and their girlfriends situated their rooms soon after unloading both vehicles, and the sun began to set. The home had to have been built in the late 70s. The design of the architecture, the appliances, and even the plug outlets were dated. The home didn't have Wi-Fi, but it did have an old bulky television that seemed to only have three or so channels. But thankfully, this wasn't an issue. Most of the fun will be had down at the lake or out back around the fire pit. The Marines and their lovers got settled for the evening. One of the Marines started up a grill around back while everyone else began drinking. The old home seemed to be some type of investment property, since no one could reasonably live out here for any amount of time. To everyone else, the home seemed normal. It just lacked the type of care that a normal home should have. But to the Marine that grew up hearing about the ghost stories of Wasatch County, couldn't help but feel an eeriness on the property. Surely this was the result of childhood rumors planting deep seeds of fear and doubt into the young man. He was here to have fun and to forget about the tough times that he'd seen on deployment. Everyone else didn't seem to mind, so surely he could try his best to forget about what he'd heard all his childhood. Night slowly crept as one of the Marines cooked up some burgers while one of the girls started a sizable fire with sufficient firewood to last the night. Ryan, one of the more rowdy Marines, had already set up a makeshift target out back out of an old wheelbarrow found next to a shed, and had begun firing his concealed firearm that he carried. Normally something like this would be an issue. The sound alone would surely notify someone nearby, but that was it. No one was nearby. Not for miles. Thankfully, it didn't take long for Ryan to run out of ammo and come back to the slightly annoyed.
Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.
Group. They all eventually made their way around the campfire in different states of soberness from the alcohol and other substances. The fire burned hot as the night passed, as each person experienced reality in their own different way. But as they sobered up and the night was at its darkest, one of the girls suggested telling ghost stories. Robert, the Marine that grew up in Utah, eyes grew wide. The suggestion snapped him back into the mindset of the area containing some type of paranormal essence. He was strongly against the idea, but he didn't protest. He knew that talking about things like this drew negative energy towards you, but he didn't want to be the guy to shoot down a good time. The stories began lighthearted and cliché. Mostly just random urban legends or low-quality scary stories, but it wasn't until one of the Marines shared a particularly scary story about his uncle a couple of years ago. The Marine shared that his uncle was a Boy Scout some 20 years ago in a small town. I guess his Boy Scout troop was attacked by some type of cryptid creature that killed both the uncle's Boy Scout leaders and half the troop. But that wasn't the scary part. I guess this creature tried speaking to the boys, and even tried imitating the leaders and tricking the boys into opening the cabin door. A hush fell upon the group. Since no one had heard an alleged true scary story to this quality before, all the Marines stared with their eyes wide, and all the girls there, despite being with their military boyfriends, were clearly shaken by the story. One of the girls piped up after a few seconds of silence when the story ended. "How did your uncle kill the creature?" she said with a faint glimmer of hope. The Marine sharing the story looked at her with heavy eyes and simply shook his head. He didn't. If on cue, the group unanimously decided that it was now time for bed, or at least time to go inside. The aura around the campfire had completely changed. No one was laughing or conversing lightheartedly like before, but rather, all of them were looking all around in the woods. The woods were now silent, save it for the crackling of the now dimming fire. Robert reached for another log to add to the fire, but was only met with small twigs remaining in the once towering stack of logs. The group made their way inside while Ryan covered the fire with dirt and a shovel. Once inside, the once lively group was slightly spooked to the point that they were all on high alert, and all hopes of falling asleep had scattered into the dark night. Seeing how no one was going to be going to sleep anytime soon, one of the girls suggested that they should play cards at the dining room table next to the rear window of the home. The window looked directly out into the fire pit and the wood surrounding it. The ugly green window curtains that draped partially over the window was more for decoration since the curtain didn't completely cover the windows. The eeriness that once surrounded them outside seemed to slowly fade as the festivities inside replaced the haunting aura of the woods. Spirits were high again, along as other things, as the card game slowly morphed into a drinking game. All the Marines and their girlfriends were enjoying the loud laughter and heavy drinking, not realizing that something outside was lurking in between the curtains. One of the many downsides of the Airbnb was the home only had one working bathroom. This was problematic, since the girls and the Marines had consumed multiple alcoholic beverages, which led to the inevitable need for everyone needing to use the bathroom. One of the girls stated that they needed to use the bathroom before going to bed, which led everyone to realizing that they also needed to pee. Seeing how this could take a decent amount of time if they only used one bathroom, Ryan suggested that all the men went outside to pee, while all the women stayed inside and used the bathroom. Before anyone could say anything, half the guys got up and rushed outside to pee. The men, being heavily intoxicated and unfocused, didn't notice how loud they were being or the tall, gaunt humanoid creature standing in the shadows on the porch. The guys left the home and went off into the woods to do their business. The pale creature watched as all the men left the home, leaving the back door to the house unlocked. The men stumbled their way out into the woods a good distance away from the home, not realizing the impending threat that only stood a few dozen yards behind them. The creature looked at the men and then back at the house, seeing that there was only a young woman occupying the home. The creature crept slowly across the porch and into the house. The bathroom that all the girls were waiting for was across the house, so they didn't realize that something unearthly had entered. The creature walked silently inside and began searching the house for easy prey. Its red eyes scanned the house as it strained to hear where these girls were. Unfortunately, the girls were equally as intoxicated and just as loud. The first girl to exit the bathroom washed up and made her way back to the kitchen. She stumbled her way through the hallway when she caught sight of something peering around the corner at her and the other girls. The image at first startled her as she saw what looked like a tall, decaying man with twisted antlers hiding behind the corner. She stared down the hallway, unsure of what she just saw. She was fairly intoxicated, so she was unsure of what to do, whether to warn the rest of the girls of this horrific creature that had entered the house, or just to ignore it. The woman figured she had just imagined it, so she promptly went to her room to go to bed. The guys outside continued their loud banter as they all simultaneously were relieving themselves on various trees a decent distance away. As fate would have it, a small moment of silence fell over them and they heard multiple screams coming back from inside the home. The initial reaction of the guys was erupting laughter, thinking that one of them must have seen a spider or something. Seeing that there was no initial threat causing the Marines to hustle back, they took their time and waited for all the men to finish their business before heading back. The Marines eventually made their way back to the house while the screams continued. However, the screams weren't that of initial shock of some small insect, but rather blood-curdling and intense. The guys entered the home, and they all went to find the source of the screaming when a loud banging could be heard. The guys stopped their laughter as they made their way down the hall and saw the 9-foot wendigo slamming one of the heads of the girls against the wall, turning it to a bloody pulp. The hallway was lined with a few bodies of the girls, while one or two of them still screamed while cornered in the bathroom. The wendigo continued slamming the head of the unconscious on the wall until it caved in, splattering the area of the wall with their brains. Screams then erupted from the Marines, as they now faced this demonic humanoid, now towering in front of them. Ryan pulled his concealed pistol from his waistband and aimed his weapon at the creature. He pulled the trigger to feel a small click, indicating the weapon didn't have any ammo. He tried racking the slide a few times, only to receive the same result. The wendigo then turned to find the 5 Marines screaming at it, causing it to press the attack onto the guys. The Marines had never seen anything like this before. All combat experience fled their minds as they saw this beast grab Ryan by the throat and begin to tear his head off almost instantly. Seeing how this creature was incredibly strong, the Marines tried to go their separate ways to attain a weapon to try to kill this beast. However, the wendigo quickly made light work of the unarmed men. The girls hiding in the bathroom stopped screaming in order to hear what was going on outside, only to be met with more screaming. After a few minutes of complete chaos, silence eventually fell upon the blood-strewn home. Down the mountain in Wasatch County lay Wyatt, a young, peculiar teenage boy with a special gift. Although Wyatt was incredibly socially awkward, he had a very special gift, although to him and those that knew this, considered it a curse. Wyatt had the ability to see real events in his dreams despite being nowhere near the actual event. The restless Wyatt laid paralyzed as he saw the events unfold with gruesome detail. He saw the Marines being dismembered and their skulls being crushed on the tile floor with terrifying accuracy. But that wasn't what stood out to him when he woke up. According to his dream, there still lurked a few girls that had yet to be detected by the hideous creature. Their muffled cries haunted Wyatt until the sun eventually made its way over the mountains and into Wyatt's room, eventually waking him. Wyatt woke up in a sweat-covered bed as he still continued to sweat heavily and was out of breath. Being disoriented from such horrific scenes and nearly dehydrated, all he could do was lay back down and try to catch his breath. A few minutes passed, which allowed the poor teen to gain his composure and finally get up for the day. Wyatt's home was empty, as it normally was. His mother was at work down at the sheriff's office as a secretary. Wyatt's father had been out of the picture for quite some time. He was abusive, both verbally and physically, which made his disappearance preferable to not only Wyatt and his mother, but also the rest of the town. Wyatt's relationship with his mother was unique. Unlike everyone else Wyatt told his dreams to, his mother, Janice, who was immensely supportive and believed him when he would always share his dreams. Wyatt took a quick shower, skipped breakfast as his horrific dream still weighed heavily in his mind. The women hiding in the home on the desolate mountain were on the clock, and Wyatt knew that. He needed to somehow not only find the home, but also a way to rescue the girls from the creature before something happened to them. Wyatt rode his bicycle down the empty streets of his town to the sheriff's office to speak to his mother. She normally listened intently and gave great advice as to how to go about what to do. Normally his dreams were of heinous acts that were committed states away, and that all he needed to do was to send an anonymous tip to the authorities. This one was obviously more time-sensitive. The 13-minute bike ride blurred as he entered the parking lot, leaving his bicycle on the sidewalk. The small sheriff's office was aware of Wyatt and found him to be a unique boy, but nothing more. It was difficult for anyone to believe such extraordinary tales, let alone from a child. Most people, the sheriff included, just figured he watched too much television or wanted attention. However, they were always interested in what he had to say. Wyatt entered the office and saw his mother typing furiously away at the front desk. "Hey, bud," his mother exclaimed as she continued to type away without taking her eyes off the screen. "What's up, big guy?" one of the deputies said as he walked by messing up his hair playfully. Wyatt ignored the deputy and raced up to his mother's desk. "Some of them are still alive," he said while getting a bit ahead of himself. "Who's still alive, dear?" his mother replied, still keeping her eyes on the screen. "There's something in the mountains that just killed 7 people. I don't know where it is or what had killed these people, but it doesn't know that there's still some girls hiding in the house." His mother stopped typing and looked directly into her son's eyes. Wyatt's mother was currently typing on a report of a man found dismembered up in the mountains just last week. She hadn't told Wyatt, but there had been multiple incidences of people going missing or remnants of body parts being found on trails leading up the mountain. For her to hear what her son just said, and the events that had been happening caused her to stop in her tracks. "Do you think you could recognize the house if we brought you to it?" she said with a concerned look. "I only saw the inside and part of the backyard, but it was nighttime. I'd have to go in to be sure." His mother got up and gave him a quick hug before walking briskly over to the sheriff's office and knocked. "Come in," replied a muffled voice from inside. She entered the office and Wyatt followed behind her but remained silent. The sheriff sat at his desk typing up a similar report of another missing person, but struggling to maintain the efficiency and the speed that Wyatt's mother was able to operate. The sheriff glanced up and acknowledged Wyatt's mother, but didn't completely stop typing until he saw Wyatt standing behind her.
"Wyatt, what's up, big guy?"
he said while exiting out of the report and getting up to shake his hand. Sheriff Griswold was an older man, but quite large. He wore a thick sculpted beard that had streaks of gray in it, but was still very capable to perform his duties. Wyatt remained silent as Sheriff Griswold's size alone was intimidating. "Wyatt may have something for us to look into," his mother said nervously, since she had once before mentioned his gift to the sheriff, for only him to scoff at the suggestion.
"Oh, that's right. You can see the future," he said while chuckling.
Not the future, sir," Wyatt whimpered. "Only what's happening in real time."
"That's what it was," Sheriff Griswold said while snapping his fingers loudly and smiling. "Well, what do you got for us?"
Wyatt stood frozen and tried to speak, but could only stutter since he was frozen with fear. The sheriff was aware of his condition, both of his social awkwardness and how he lacked a father figure at home to help with his confidence. After a few seconds of struggling, his mother interjected. "He may have a lead on who was involved with the Henderson case. she said softly, purposely leaving out the part of the quote-unquote monster that was responsible. The Henderson case had a similar situation. Although the bodies were found dismembered in the camping trailer and all the details were kept from the public, they also had no leads. Sheriff Griswold's playful smile slowly faded, since the Henderson case had personally left him and the rest of the department, not only stumped, but also somewhat fearful of what could have been responsible.
"What information do you have for me?" the sheriff responded sternly.
He thinks whoever's responsible is still at one of the houses on the mountain, but isn't sure which one. The sheriff was torn. Normally, he wouldn't even entertain the idea of listening to Wyatt and his fantastical dreams. However, he and Wyatt's mother had secretly been seeing each other, but most importantly, he was needing any help he could get to make any headway on the case. The sheriff paused for a long time while looking at Wyatt's mother and back to Wyatt.
"All right, let's look into this," he said, somewhat defeated.
He hated going off such unreliable information.
"Hop in my truck and we'll go take a look."
Wyatt's mother mouthed the words, "thank you," and Sheriff Griswold gave a sheepish smile, somewhat showing his displeasure on relying on such a small teenager to make a headway on such a big case. Wyatt was frozen with anxiety, since he didn't want to personally go up to the crime scene, but he also didn't want to ride with the sheriff. Thankfully for Wyatt and the sheriff, there were only a handful of homes that sat on the mountain, but they were all somewhat far from each other. Just driving to the homes themselves would take hours, let alone investigating each one. The sheriff and Wyatt hopped in the truck and headed off on the gravel road that led up the mountain. The first home they came across was one of Sheriff Griswold's personal good friends, Brian Claytonson, an avid outdoorsman and the sheriff's personal hunting buddy. They parked in the driveway and both got out of the truck and approached the door. The sheriff's burly hand knocked on the door, which almost immediately opened to an equally intimidating man standing shirtless behind the door.
"Oh great, it's the law," Brian said jokingly.
"How are we doing today?" the sheriff responded. "I got Mr. White here with me, and we're just checking in with everyone on the mountain, making sure everyone's okay."
"Yeah, why wouldn't I be?"
Brian responded, confused. "Glad to hear it. Just making sure you hadn't had any issues with the wildlife is all. If anything, the wildlife has an issue with me," pointing back at his numerous trophies he'd killed.
"Of course.
Well, we're just making the rounds, and you're welcome to join us. I'm thinking maybe later we'll hit up the ice cream shop in town once we're done." Brian smiled at Wyatt, saying he was clearly uncomfortable.
"Ice cream? Now we're talking."
"Do I have to wear a shirt?" Brian said, jiggling his fat gut, trying to lighten Wyatt's spirits.
"Shirts are mandatory for this checkup," the sheriff responded while shaking his head.
"Well, I'm sure to have one lying around here somewhere," Brian said while ducking back into his home. A few seconds later, Brian emerged with a dirty and torn shirt ready to join the sheriff and Wyatt. Before they left the home, the sheriff told Brian to also grab his shotgun, just in case. Brian froze.
"Oh, it's one of those checkups. Gotcha."
Brian went back in and grabbed his shotgun off the wall and exited his home. The three men continued their way up the mountain. The next stop, they all exited the truck, and Brian left his gun in the back of the truck. The sheriff knocked on the door, but no one answered. He looked at Wyatt and asked if this home looked familiar.
"Hard to say. Can we go look around back or something?"
The sheriff peered inside the house before answering,
"Technically no. I'm not allowed to, but you can."
Wyatt froze with fear as he was forced to investigate the backyard by himself.
"I'll go with you," Brian said, hardly making the task less daunting.
Wyatt and Brian walked around back to find a normal-looking backyard that hadn't been taken care of. It looked like nothing from Wyatt's dream.
"There's no fire pit,"
Wyatt whispered as they both went back to the truck. The three continued their way up the mountain, seldomly stopping from time to time at randomly located homes and cabins. As fate would have it, on this remote drive they arrived at a long driveway, and parked at the bottom. Two vehicles could be seen at the bottom of the driveway, although the house itself was mostly obscured by the trees and brush. A sense of uneasiness fell upon the three in the truck as the sheriff began the ascent up the gravel driveway, and the home became more visible. By this time of day, the sun was still out technically, but on the other side of the mountain, casting hideous shadows and making visibility very difficult. But that wasn't the issue. When the three finally parked and was able to take in the full view of the home, Wyatt knew immediately, without seeing the backyard, that this was indeed the house. The feeling of eeriness and dread were compatible with the same feelings that he experienced in his dream. "This is it," Wyatt whispered, notifying both the sheriff and his friends that firearms would most definitely be required. The three exited the truck and took their time circling the house before approaching the front door. The home was exactly like the one Wyatt had seen in his dreams. Out back was the fire pit with beer cans still littering the porch area. Wyatt even noticed the wheelbarrow that was still propped up against the tree with bolt holes scattered across the bottom. The sheriff unholstered his sidearm, and Brian stayed back with his shotgun as to not alarm the homeowners if they came out. The sheriff and Wyatt approached the front door slowly. Lights could still be seen inside, but the home had no sound or movement indicating that anyone was home. The sheriff knocked on the front door, only to receive silence in return. However, that didn't last long, as movement could be heard inside, but no one ever approached the front door. "Wasatch County Police, open up," the sheriff barked. His large frame paced back and forth as he clearly knew something wasn't right. A thunderous stomping could be heard inside as if a large clumsy animal banged against all the walls and floors with extreme excitement. At the same time, screams could be heard inside, as to notify both the sheriff and Wyatt that help was needed. Not waiting any longer, the sheriff slammed his weight forward against the door, causing the frame to explode and splinter into wood fragments, knocking the door and the sheriff over. The screams and movements inside were no longer muffled, as the source of sound was no longer obstructed. The sheriff scrambled to his feet and began venturing inside while Wyatt waited at the doorframe. The home was covered in dried blood and various body parts that were once human organs, or so Wyatt thought. The walls and floors were smeared carelessly of heavy splotches of blood and other bodily liquids. Wyatt's hands began to sweat as his body now shook. The young woman hiding in the house screamed for help, revealing their location to the sheriff. However, the sheriff wasn't taking any chances. At this time, Brian came running up from the truck and entered the home to aid the sheriff. "Oh my goodness, what happened here?" he screamed. The sight and the situation had everyone startled, but what was more disturbing than the blood and the dead bodies strewn about was the fact that whoever or whatever did this was probably still inside. "Griswold, what do we do?" Brian shouted. Backup would take hours to arrive, and these people needed help now. "Brian, you and I need to help find this guy. Wyatt, we need you to step up and find the girls. Can you do that for us?" the sheriff shouted. Wyatt was petrified. His social awkwardness was getting the better of him, and he couldn't speak. The shouting, the blood, and the situation in general caused him to no longer be able to think. To Wyatt's surprise, he found himself entering the home as the sheriff and Brian began to sweep the house. The screams of the women were on the left side of the house with the most blood and damage. Wyatt had to step over the bodies of several disemboweled corpses, with all of their heads being crushed on the floor. Warm tears began to well in his eyes as he pressed down the hallway into the rooms with all the screaming. Wyatt slowly creaked the door open to reveal a dark master bedroom with all of its furniture flipped over. "We're in here! Please help us!" a young feminine voice screamed. Wyatt tried to call out to the voice to come out and that they were now safe, but his voice was still caught in his throat. Wyatt tried turning on the lights to the bedroom, but the room remained dark as the light switch flickered in both positions. Brian and the sheriff could still be heard on the other side of the house, frantically searching for the culprit. A dark figure then revealed itself standing in the corner of the dark room.
"Please, help us," the figure cried.
White stood frozen as the figure shook and twitched abnormally. Wyatt was in shock as the figure then slowly began to approach Wyatt, revealing a head of long hair draping over its face. Wyatt stepped back as the figure then stood upright, removing the long hair scalp that sat unevenly on the head of the Wendigo.
"There you are, Wyatt,"
the Wendigo grunted as it reached forward, grabbing him by the throat in the hallway. The grip of the Wendigo was incredibly tight, as Wyatt could feel the blood in his body, no longer being able to reach his brain. Before Wyatt blacked out, a shot rang across the house, causing a black splattering of blood to erupt from the Wendigo's face, causing Wyatt to be dropped. More shots began to ring out as the Wendigo stumbled back and eventually laid lifeless on the floor. Brian and the sheriff rushed over to Wyatt after confirming that the Wendigo was indeed dead, and checked up on him.
"We did it, buddy. We got him."
Wyatt coughed as his now bruised throat was able to get blood back to his brain.
"Did you find the girls?" the sheriff asked, hopefully.
Brian entered the room the Wendigo was hiding in and retrieved the scalp of one of the women that had long strands of hair still attached to it, that the Wendigo used as a disguise. Brian tossed the scalp to the sheriff and shook his head. The body of the Wendigo now began to shake violently, causing the three men to jump back from being startled as the Wendigo slowly began to transform from some woodland demon to what appeared to be a normal-looking man, despite half its skull missing. To everyone's horror, not only did the Wendigo find and kill the rest of the girls hiding in the home, it then transformed into the deceased body of Wyatt's missing father.